So my favorite movie couple is the couple from Incredibles, because they work together and they support each other through everything, even saving the world.
One of my favorite couples is my grandparents. They've been married for 58 years now, and they are still very romantic, and they're a great example of what it means to be faithful to each other.
I have a really romanticized notion of this couple, but my favorite couple would be Nicholas and Alexandra Romanov from early Russia history. They just loved each other a lot and got through a lot, and they died together, sadly.
Well, those are some of the favorite couples that were listed by people we talked to, and you heard it all in the list, from relatives to movie couples, even tragic figures from history. Hey, everyone, this is Lisa Anderson, and welcome to this week's episode of The Boundless Show. Later on for our inbox, we have a listener who knows the value of giving, but isn't quite sure what groups and organizations he should give to. How do you decipher it all and parse out the ones that are great? So we have got finance and donor whiz Josh Zychik here to provide some clarity on that. For our culture segment, we have American superstar, half marathon record holder Ryan Hall. He listened to the Lord back when he started running, and he just found his calling in running. But it's not just about running. It is about life. It is about really giving your whole career to God and what it looks like when maybe some things stop and other things start. And so great conversation with him that really applies to all areas of our life. Well, here we are for our roundtable, and you heard it in the teaser. We are going to be talking about favorite couples, both fictional and non-fictional. And so fortunately, we have got Luke, Ashley, and Chris here. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey.
Hello. Hello. Okay, and we also have Ashley is super young. She's one of our interns here this summer. So I had to tell her before we started taping that one of the people she gave, I had to even Google, like it was one of her fictional people. And there were others that were submitted by you Boundless Insiders that I also had to Google, because maybe I'm not up on all of these, I guess. But this was kind of fun. So let's just first talk through some of the ones that you guys listed and why, because we want this to just be a fun conversation, but maybe also glean some info as to why these couples strike you, the good and the bad, and kind of what that means as you look at your own relationships. So who wants to start?
I feel like one of the couples that has gotten the least amount of screen time, but I've appreciated the most, is the couple from Up, Pixar's movie Up.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even remember their names. Like, They're silent for the first 5 minutes
or 10 minutes.
Do they even
have names? I don't
know. The guy does. Yeah. The old
Mr.
man.
Mr. Wilson?
Mr. Wilson.
Something. It might be.
Is it Carl?
That sounds familiar.
Carl's the bird.
Oh.
Well, we've got the old man from Up and his wife, and the beautiful story that is portrayed.
That's a good one.
Silent, but it's beautifully shown that they are working together for common goals. They go through common tragedy, and but they still love each other and care for each other and move on past that. I think it's a really beautiful picture of what a relationship could look like.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Yeah. Well, kind of going around those lines of, you know, love that lasts that long, I listed Stan Lee and Joanna Lee, Stan Lee being the writer of a lot of Marvel comic books.
Mm-hmm.
I was a huge comic book guy.
So the real life Marvel comic guy, not a superhero.
The real life Marvel
comic guy. The
actual
creator of some. Yeah, there we go.
So anytime he brought her up in an interview or anything like that, usually it was she drove him to do the thing that he wasn't necessarily comfortable with doing, and it actually became the big Marvel universe that we have to this day.
Okay.
Like, he would question, well, should I take that risk?
Mm-hmm. Good.
And she kind of drove him to do that. And, you know, their love lasted 70 years. So, I mean,
that's amazing.
That's a long time.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I think for me, when I think about couples, Jim and Elizabeth Elliot come to mind, as well as Oswald and Biddy Chambers. So two couples who had a common goal to serve the kingdom together. And in both cases, the husband passed away first and the wife continued the ministry.
Oh.
And I think, you know, that is, I mean, what more could you ask? It's like when two people come together and together they're bigger for the kingdom than apart. Mm-hmm. That's like what is most iconic, I believe, in a couple.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, like Oswald in Biddy Chambers. Like, her name is Biddy because he called her Beloved Disciple. That was his little nickname for her. And so for short, he called her BD, which turned into Biddy, which is, you know, not the most casual of nicknames, Beloved Disciple. But I think that their love for the Lord just completely directed the way that they lived their lives. And it just showed.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, I know even in looking at what some of our insiders responded, there were other couples like the Luthers who were mentioned, and just being kind of really in an era where marriage was kind of up for grabs or up for debate. They kind of defined what that looked like, and to be in ministry together was really big. Martin Luther and his wife. And I think some people just like them because she brewed beer down in their basement, but whatever. But
that's good reason.
And even more commonly, John and Noel Piper, you know, people mentioned them, some current pastors or theologians, and their spouses, you know, who've been supportive of each other through ministry. What would you say? I mean, let's talk about a couple more of the fictional ones. Like, what are some couples that you would expect a lot of people to mention, and for what reason?
Yeah. I think about from Parks and Rec, I know we were talking earlier, the main character, Leslie Knope, who's kind of the head of the Parks and Recreation Department. She's super independent. And then all of a sudden, this guy, Ben, comes along in like season three, and they're both super passionate about what they do. But when they get together, like neither of their passions dull, it just intensifies, and they're both into their own things and supporting each other. And they're just like really iconic. And I think their love story is one that shows just what it looks like to encourage each other without being competitive or, you know, downplaying the other person, but bringing out truly the best in each other. And they're cool. Just both really funny. So,
yep.
Iconic wise, one of my favorite movies growing up, because of, I guess, the love that it showed in the film, was Big Fish by Tim Burton.
It's a good one.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite films of all time. I think it really portrays the positives of marriage in a lot of really good ways, and kind of like the real love there that it shows throughout the film, and that he would do anything for her. And, you know, at some point they make you think like maybe he's being tempted somewhere else, and then you find out he would stay true the whole time. So it was a really positive thing for me to see in high school. We saw it in art. We watched it in our art class. So it was really good, and it kind of gave me a really positive outlook on marriage in a hard time. So
yeah, that's good.
A couple that stands out for me from the classic Lord of the Rings trilogy, I'm thinking of Aragorn and Arwen. Aragorn, who used to be this, he was a strider. He was this independent person who would do good on behalf of those who couldn't take care of themselves in dire straits. And then you have Arwen, who's this daughter of an elvish king. They have totally separate lives, totally different trajectories. But what I appreciate about their love, the movie kind of, I don't really enjoy how the movie's portray Arwen in particular. She's just sort of breathy and longing and just sort of awkward. I don't really enjoy that particular aspect, but what I love is that it's more than just these, oh, she's an elf and a mortal and she's giving up all this to be with this man. What dramatic love. That's not the most interesting part to me. For me, it's he's willing to take up a mantle of responsibility after a life of solitude, doing something that he loved and wanted to do, and he had to give that up for this, for something that he loved, for a person he loves, but also taking on this huge mantle of responsibility as the king of the kingdom of humanity, of men. But then Arwen seems like she's taking a huge step down and he's taking a huge step up, but really what she's doing is demonstrating unity in a world of racial conflict. Mm-hmm. You have elves fighting dwarves, and you have really good examples of people like Legolas, who's an elf, befriending a dwarf, and their relationship is really cool as a friendship. But what Arwen and Aragorn is demonstrating is, after this time of conflict and everyone fending for themselves, now we actually have a united kingdom protecting and looking out for each other, and not just looking out for their own interests. So it's more what they represent than their own individual relationship, which you don't honestly see that much of.
Yeah. So almost as epic is the movie Couples Retreat, which I'm always the one that throws out, like, whenever people are like, you know, most epic films of all time, and I'm like, Beverly Hills Chihuahua. Anyway.
That's a good movie. That's a good demonstration of love.
Of a couple. I know. He, like, totally ran across the border for. Anywho.
Mi corazón.
But Couples Retreat is one of those movies that is very problematic in many ways, but by the end of that movie, every one of those married couples has stayed together despite train wreck relationship issues, and they go. And I was surprised when I saw that movie, not only how the couples came to an understanding of one another, were willing to go through therapy together, were willing to break down a lot of their own issues, but also how even some of the marriage therapy and advice that was portrayed was actually somewhat legit from coming from a totally non-Christian perspective, and the whole idea of self-sacrifice and cooperation and whatever. And of course, it's like set in Bora Bora or something, so that makes it especially awesome. But I just thought, like, and you know, Vince Vaughn is one of the characters who, he has been in some pretty horrible movies, but he's kind of that everyman who's just like the guy who loves his wife but does no great job of communicating it ever, and he has to learn how to show his appreciation of and love for her. And I just think it's a fun movie for that reason. But okay, what about, like, what would you say, you know, we talked about some that are more current, some that are more classic, what about just either couples that we see, whether in the news or current people that are kind of doing marriage right now, or people, real life people that you actually have contact with every day. What, you know, who do you see out there that you're like, they've got some really good stuff going on and I could learn some stuff from them?
Yeah, I think for me, it would be my sister and her husband, Paige and Ryan. They've been married for a whole 6 months. But even when they just started dating, it was so clear that together they were just going to be this huge force for the kingdom of God. And so not only that, but just when you're around them, you can just see the best parts of them in each other. And so knowing my sister for, you know, my whole life, and then all of a sudden this guy comes around, I was obviously a little bit like, okay, like, what's going on here? But seeing how he brought her closer to Christ and just really just like brought the life out of her, that just made me like love him and love her so much. And then what I think they do really well is it can be easy to, as a couple, like isolate yourself from the people around you, whether it be, you know, your family or your other single friends or even other couples. And I think they're very intentional about continuing to reach out even while they're first discovering, you know, what it looks like to be married. Like, for instance, like, I'm here in Colorado Springs for the summer, and they were missing me, so they sent me a potato in the mail that said, "We miss you," with our faces on it, which is really random and, like, weird, but it was just really nice of them and thoughtful. Just know that they still think about me and pray for me, so.
Yeah, that's awesome.
A young couple that I think of who, they've also not been married for a very long time, but Matt and Steph, they've been on the show before, and I really appreciate how they communicate. Like, they communicate with each other better than my parents do, and a lot of couples that I know of. And they've gone through some struggles, some frustrations that they've had to deal with as a couple preparing for marriage or as they were dating. And I just hear stories from Matt or from Steph about disagreements that they've had and how they've handled that conflict. And I think, wow, I think I would be a different person if more people in my life had handled conflict the way that these people who are younger than me are handling conflict. And I honestly look up to them for that.
Yeah, that's cool. I was just out a couple weeks ago at Focus on the Family's Hope Restored in Branson, Missouri, which basically takes couples who are on the verge of divorce, and some of them have even filed papers already, and got to sit through an entire week of therapy with five couples. And it was just amazing, the transformation. Mm-hmm. But what made it, I think, such an impact on them was the therapist, who's one of Focus's therapists, his name is Bob Paul, shared so many stories from his own marriage, and his wife, of course, had given him permission. And it was like there were some major mess ups that both of them had. And to just be like, I'm a therapist and I'm still a sinful person who is selfish, who is like, you know, he was like, I'm a codependent and I'm a, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And just for them to see that and be like, oh my word, if that's you, then there's hope for me. Yeah. And there's hope for personal growth and it's not too late. And so it's just great when couples can mm-hmm. get in the space to share their own story and be willing to do that transparently. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love when couples are vulnerable, mm-hmm. you know, because nobody, if there's like a picture perfect couple, that just isn't really relatable or attainable. And so when a couple's like, yeah, this is what we're going through, but, you know, relating it to the gospel, like, you know, but this is who God is, that mm-hmm. just makes it so much better and so much more of something that we can look to and strive for ourselves.
Yeah.
Well, and kind of going around those lines, I kind of liked, and this is another fictional couple, mm-hmm. but that's kind of why I liked, I've binge watched The Office. I'm going on my fourth time now.
Mm. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you need to talk about
I think I need a life.
Yeah.
But I can't remember
that's
how
another
to
round
get
table.
One of those.
Yeah, okay.
But Jim Halpert and Pam in the show, at first it kind of seems like it's going the classic, perfect couple route. Mm-hmm. And it is for a little bit. Mm-hmm. They have great story and all that. But then things kind of get hard towards the end and you kind of see them work through those things. So kind of seeing the struggles of what can happen even to those couples that you go, oh man, they were the dream couple in high school and all that kind of stuff, and they got me, like, mm-hmm. those types of things that we kind of, as outsiders, we fantasize those certain things, but seeing the real struggle and seeing that they work through those is the really that's what touches me the most, mm-hmm. is the fact that we can see them work through those things. That means a lot.
Well, and even to that point, there were some of our insiders who listed even current, whether celebrity couples or other people who are kind of well-known, who even in the spotlight seem to be doing some things well. Like Erica mentioned Steph and Aisha Curry. Mm. Several people mentioned Chip and Joanna Gaines. But I kind of want to say, like, if you're living in an awesome modern farmhouse setup that's, like, decluttered, I think you have a better chance at a good marriage. But that's just a side note for me. And then a few people also mentioned Kristen Bell and Dax Shepard, just because whenever they're interviewed, they're just very, in fact, one person said they speak so highly of each other and support each other. They joke around a lot and aren't afraid to be silly, which is a fun thing to see, I think, in couples as well. So thinking of some of these couples or other couples, fictional or not, what are some things that you see recurring, whether in shows or in commonplace things that you would not want to emulate? Like some of the things that are kind of almost lifted up as like, here's what not to do either. And it's usually used for comedic purposes or, right. you know, or for other things, mm-hmm. which is kind of funny because actually a few people, I don't know who these Boundless listeners are, but are they super old or what? But a few people mentioned like Home Improvement, like back from, you know, like the Taylors and stuff, and mm-hmm. how he was kind of that, like, but I mean, again, there was a sweetness to their relationship, even mm-hmm. though there were lots of like missteps and there was tons of like weird chauvinistic stuff and whatever. And then people had mentioned too, like the from the Cosby Show, you know, like the Huxtables and stuff. So another kind of iconic couple, but not everyone does it well. So what would you say are some of the things to not emulate?
Well, there's one that just comes to mind. And while I was trying to think through these questions, I go, man, I keep thinking of the ones that I wouldn't want to be mm-hmm. uh-huh. and not the ones I would want to be. So one of the biggest ones that came to mind, it was my favorite cartoon. I was a really weird kid. I'm going to say that right now. was Courage the Cowardly Dog.
Are you kidding me?
That was one of
I was a weird kid too then. High five across
High
the table.
High five across
okay,
the
so
table.
Okay, so was this a dog couple or what was going on here with these people?
No.
Don't want to emulate that. Let's start off with that.
They were, it was an elderly couple that lived in a house in the middle of nowhere, and they owned a dog called Courage the Cowardly Dog.
Okay.
It's kind of all from the perspective of the dog, like the entire show. But the husband is a little bit abusive to the dog, and he doesn't really care about anything. He just sits in his chair all day, and he's kind of rude. Anytime she's excited about something, he kind of shoots her down. Mm-hmm. Anytime the dog's freaking out, he scares the dog or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, like, kind of like, I guess I wouldn't want to emulate being the guy who just sits around doing nothing all day
yeah,
and just
dogs.
Being rude. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Probably a good life lesson right mm-hmm. there. Luke.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Good point.
I think just straight up disrespect. Mm-hmm. Whenever, you know, you see a couple where, whether it's in public or even just like speaking one-on-one, that is just going to, whether it's, you know, really overt or a little bit hidden, just disrespects their significant other. Mm-hmm. I think that's just so unattractive.
Yeah.
And you just have to be kind. I mean, that is like, that's your person. That's who you committed your life to. You love that person. Why would you ever want anybody to think anything but like the most of the person that you love? Mm-hmm. And so I think respect, mutual respect is so important. And if it's not there between each other, then it's not definitely not going to be there when you're talking about the person with other people.
Yeah. And I think that makes me think, Ashley, so much of, and I can say this, I think as a female, like what I can't stand is when women, whether in shows or in real life or whatever, are constantly correcting their husbands. Yeah. Or like treating them like, I mean, when a woman says, oh yeah, you know, I have four kids, you know, three are under 12 and one is, you know, 35, or when, you know, when they say their husband is one of the kids, or they're just very demeaning and stuff like that, just is like nails on a chalkboard for me. It's just not helpful. But conversely, when you see couples constantly building one another up in front of other people and speaking well of them, I think that just pours into that other person immeasurably.
Yeah. And like as the woman in the relationship, like you want your husband or, you know, your boyfriend to be the man that like God has created them to be.
Yeah.
And by acting like their mom in a way or just belittling them, that is not going to do any good.
Right.
So, yeah, encouragement is so big.
Yeah. No momming required. They already have a mom.
Right. Micromanagement as a theme, either direction. I've seen it. Real life, tons of characters in TV shows, movies, books, whatever. I think a show that depicts every possible kind of dysfunctional relationship is Stranger Things.
Oh,
I've been watching season 3. This is spoiler free, but you can tell this from the last season.
Yeah.
Every relationship is either micromanaging the other person, or they're really young, so they have no idea who the other person even is or how to relate to them. Or the older couples are just really fed up with each other. Like every single couple I can think of, especially since season 3, and you can get this from the trailer, the theme is relationships, really.
Yeah.
Every single relationship is really bad.
Yeah.
And
maybe
just
not enough people
those.
Knew about therapy in the 80s. That's
you know,
that's
probably
kind
it.
Of like wondering. They were just all left to their own devices, so they were just crazy. I don't know.
Which makes me grateful today for the kinds of resources that we have.
Yeah.
Like, thinking about couples like Matt and Steph mentioned earlier who have had access
Matt
to great.
Matt Demerit, he means, who has been on our roundtable
all
many times.
Fully called out. I was going to leave his last name anonymous at least.
Just got
we
out.
Know you, Matt. Hey, hi. Sounds like marriage is going well. So, yeah. No, that's awesome.
I didn't even think about Stranger Things. Like, and now that you're bringing that to my attention, I binge watched the entire season.
No spoilers,
in
please.
One day.
I'm only halfway through.
No spoilers. No spoilers, but like even looking back on the second season, like you can see sort of the dysfunctionality starting to build, and it's an I didn't even think about that, so that's an interesting view.
Which is kind of funny because so not a TV show, but movies, like just the whole Disney scene, like this just made me think of it because, of course, you know, Lion King is, you know, the new one's out and all this stuff. And just I'm getting a little bit more fatigued of like Disney couples. And because it used to be the super lame, like damsel in distress. And then the guy was some like awkwardly amazing guy who could do no wrong. But now it's almost like it's flipped the exact opposite, where it's some She-Ra princess of power. And then the guy is just kind of like an accessory kind of thing. And I'm like, can we not get middle ground on these? Because I'm getting very weary of watching these, you know, whether they are animal couples or, you know, people or whatever. It's just kind of, again, an overblown, I think, portrayal of, you know, weird, I don't know, just some kind of stereotype.
Well, it's almost like when they did the reenactments. I don't know what you would call them, the live action films.
Oh yeah,
it's almost like they're kind of going back on what they said before. So it's almost like they're redoing the story itself. So
right.
It's a little different.
Good point. Yeah. So, Well, we want to get you in on the action, so we have put together a list. It is not scientific, so don't yell at us, of what we felt were some of the top responses or a good representation of favorite couples. So vote for the ones that you think are your favorites. And of course, we always have the comments if you feel you need to weigh in and offer some new suggestions as well. So go to boundless.org, click on the blog, you will see the blog post and weigh in with that. So thanks, you guys, for being part of this.
Thanks for having us.
Lisa.
Thank you.
Well, we're here for this week's culture segment, and for our culture segment, we often have folks on who have written books. A lot of times they're pastors or theologians or maybe relationship experts, but this week we have got a professional runner here in the house, and Ryan Hall is he actually has the half marathon record among Americans in under an hour, which is ridiculous. But Ryan, welcome to the Boundless Show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, great to have you. Obviously, your book, Run the Mile You're In, isn't just about winning half marathons or other races, but it has a lot of running in it. And it really has for you been a journey of running, but relying on the Lord throughout life, not only for your career, but for many other circumstances. But I want to back up and have you tell a little bit of your story, because you actually kind of had a run in eighth grade in Southern California around a lake near your home. Tell us why that was a pivotal moment for you.
Yeah, so I probably a lot of your listeners can relate to this, where I actually hated to run. And then I was playing baseball, basketball, and football, and wanted to play professional baseball. That was my big goal as a kid. And then one day I was just driving down to a basketball game and looking out over the lake, and I felt like God just kind of planted this little seed of a desire to try and run around the lake. So I found that to be very strange and very odd, considering how much I disliked running. And I'm so glad that I didn't miss that little seed. And I find that with a lot of God's promises that he's given me anyways, is they come as just little small whispers or little seeds, and then we have to do the work of cultivating them. So, you know, I went home, I told my dad what I wanted to do. I wanted to run 15 miles around the lake, and which I don't recommend for a first run, by the way. If you're trying to get into the sport of running, it's usually a recipe for disaster to try and take on something that big. But you know, God knows me, and he knows I love challenges like that. So I went out on this 15-mile run around the lake, and it's super painful, and it wasn't pretty, and it took hours and hours, and there's lots of stops along the way. But I remember coming back home and collapsing in the couch and just feeling like God was speaking to me. And kind of like side note, I feel like it's much easier for me to hear God when I'm physically super exhausted. And this was literally probably the second time in my life that I felt like God was speaking to me. And I felt like he was telling me that one day I would run with the best guys in the world, but he'd given me that gift so I could help other people. So, you know, that was my launching point. That was the vision that I fell back on when I was going through my tough times. And that was the belief that I held about myself and that I continued to kind of cultivate. And I spent the next 20 years going after developing that gift and running with the best guys in the world and learning how powerful running can be as an agent of change for other people's lives.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, like you said, you don't run 15 miles around Big Bear Lake and then decide, okay, yeah, you know, now this means my next step is to be an Olympian and to be a record holder and all that stuff. Obviously, your next step, you had to, you know, decide that you couldn't go after everything. And there were actually a fair number of things you had to give up in order to focus on this dream and narrow down your talents. What process really did you go through in deciding to cut out baseball from your dream and basketball? And you even had to kind of put friendship to the side a little bit, in the sense of getting focused. All your friends were up to other things. How did you figure out how to focus your energy and let some things go and give some things up?
Well, you know, I really credit my dad with this. He coached me, but he, more than that, like, he was just a constant encourager in my life, and it just imparted a lot of wisdom to me. And I remember very vividly going out for the high school baseball team, going through the tryout process, like the week-long tryout. And I remember having a conversation with my dad after those tryouts, and I remember he told me this. He's like, listen, you can be good at both of these, like baseball and running. You can be good, but if your goal is to see how good you can get, you're going to have to choose one. If your goal is greatness, you're going to have to choose one. And I think that's the thing with, like, any of our gifts that we're going after and we're trying to cultivate something. It requires us saying yes to that, requires us to say no, usually to a handful of other things. So, you know, I lost all my friends because none of my friends were running. They're all playing baseball, basketball, and football. So just kind of naturally stopped hanging out with them. And I remember that was a very kind of lonely period in my life. And I remember walking through my quad of my high school when I was a freshman and going into my dad's class at lunchtime because I had no one to eat lunch with. Like, I literally, like, had no friends. And but, you know, that was a big sacrifice I had to make. But I also remember in that moment, like, having just a quiet conversation with God and just being like, you know, I feel super lonely right now. Like, I need you to show up and, like, be my best friend. And I need to have someone I feel like I'm having a conversation with, you know. So that was a big kind of launching point for my faith, was stemming from that loneliness that came from the sacrifices that I had to make to try and cultivate my talent.
Yeah. So now people who don't do long distance, you know, type competition or who run long distances, for example, I actually did a 10K. That was my big feat, which is like, you know, less than a warm up for you. But, you know, I've been a runner in that sense. But, you know, that is a serious chunk of time that you are spending alone on the road or on the trail. You know, I mean, that's just some high quality, whether thinking time, praying time. Walk us through what that looks like for you, whether it's an hour or two or more that you're out there. What's going on in your head and heart?
Yeah, so when, you know, I was training professionally, I was running anywhere from 15 to 20 miles a day, and we would train twice a day, usually like an hour to hour and a half in the morning, and then like half an hour in the afternoon plus weight. So, you know, there's obviously a huge energy output, but that was one of the things I really loved about running, is I got away from everything during those times. And I did, you know, for the most part, you know, I went to Stanford, trained on the team there, and then trained on a team professionally for a while before I went out on my own. So there is that kind of social component as well. Like, my wife, she also runs professionally, so we'd run together all the time. And running is a great way to socialize with people, and it helps those miles kind of pass a lot quicker. But there are certainly a lot of those quiet moments where it's just you and God and your thoughts. And those are some of my most cherished memories I have from my career, was just me running out on my own on a single track trail in Big Bear and just feeling the wind blowing through my hair and hearing it blow through the trees and just feeling like I'm out experiencing God. Because for me, it's very difficult for me to just sit in one place and really, like, feel like I'm encountering God. But when I'm moving out in nature, I feel like it just flows a lot better, and I really feel like, you know, I'm experiencing him and doing something with him. So it was a really powerful season of my life to you know, get to meet God literally, you know, out on the trails, out on the roads, and in races.
Yeah. Well, okay, so obviously you have been in two Olympics, I believe, and you are a world record holder. You do half marathons, all kinds of stuff. But you have had your share of pain and setbacks as well. Give an example of what you've learned, because I think a lot of people assume, like, oh my goodness, when you achieve that level, then you're just unstoppable, and all you do, you know exactly what you need to do, what you need to tweak to make success every time. But that's not necessarily true.
No, definitely not. Like, so I remember when I first started running, I was 13, and I remember doing these hill sprints up in the mountains. It was kind of lightly snowing. It was dark out, or getting dark, you know. Like, I love running that time of day when it's just dusk, you know. But anyways, I remember having this thought. I was like, I wonder what it takes for me to go to the Olympics, for me to cultivate this gift. Like I didn't know any Olympians. No one in my town was an Olympian. So I just, like, was super curious, like, what is it going to take for me? And then now having, yeah, been to two Olympics and traveled the road, I see for myself it was just getting back up over and over and over and over again. And I had to get better at that because I wasn't very good at that originally. And it's something I'm still, you know, working on. But I would tend to, especially when I was young, like if I was playing baseball and I struck out, I would start crying and just took my failures like really personally, really hard. And so it was this long process of learning, like, how do I pick myself up quickly? And one of the verses I'd kind of fall back on over and over again is from Proverbs. Says, though a righteous man falls seven times, he rises again. And the reason why I love that verse is because, number one, you don't think of righteous people as falling. You think like they're perfect, you know, but that is not the case. Like, righteous people fall too, but it's their identifying themselves as righteous. Their sense of identity is coming from believing they're righteous that allows them to get back up after their disappointment. So it really kind of taught me, like, what do I believe about myself? And yes, like, sometimes I'm going to act or experience things that aren't in line with who I truly am. But in those moments, I need to pull back and remember who I am, what makes me special, what makes me of worth, so that I can pick myself up, you know, time and time and time again.
Yeah. Well, and it doesn't mean that there aren't residual effects of things, because I think you said in the book that you even now see, I mean, you officially retired from running professionally at the age of 33, you know, which is a lot of folks in our audience. And I think you said in the book that forcing your body so much and maybe taking some of the risks that you did, you considered it one of your bigger mistakes of your career.
Yeah, not partnering with my body. I was very, like, religious or legalistic, however you want to describe it, about my training. So if I was being coached by someone and they wrote something on a piece of paper, like, I was going to go down in flames trying to do every single run, hit the exact splits they wanted me to hit. Like, that's just how I'm kind of, like, wired. And so as a result, I just didn't listen to my body very well. And what I found kind of throughout my career is that my body was always trying to communicate to me what it needed to be at its best. But oftentimes, like, I'm just thinking, I just got to override any signals my body is giving me, when, like, really, I just need to be listening to my body, and then I'm going to get the most out of it. And, you know, a good example of this is my wife, who's 36. She just had the best year of her running career, and she's 36 years old, but she's very good at being like bamboo. She bends, but she doesn't break. She's willing, you know, if she's not feeling good a certain day, just push the workout back a day or do cross training instead. Like, she just does a great job of partnering with her body. So my view has kind of changed to being like, how do I partner with my body? Because my body actually wants to do the same thing I want to do. I just need to listen to the signals it's giving me.
Yeah. Well, and it's actually, you know, I think we can also think of how sometimes setbacks or sometimes things that we think are tripping us up, or things that we think are just bad situations in our own life, can ultimately end up being God's hand on our life. One example I know you outline is, you know, when you were doing the second Olympics and you had that hamstring injury, it ultimately caused you not to run in the 2013 Boston Marathon, which could have been tragic given the events that happened there with the bombing.
Yeah. I mean, like, God can certainly, you know, redeem any situation, you know. And this is something I feel very strongly about, is like, because I went through so many hard times, so many injuries, so many disappointments along the way. But what I've found is that there's always hope buried somewhere in that disappointment. And it just takes a lot of work for me to dig through that disappointment and find the hope. But I feel like God always gives us that little bit of hope that we need to get ourselves back up and keep moving forward. And like, dropping out of the 2012 Olympics was it was the first race in my entire life I'd ever dropped out of. But I think the neat thing about, you know, being a Christian and competing, and that there's really nothing more we can add to our life of value, of beyond what we already have, you know, like us being in right relationship with Jesus, and is the goal. It is the gold medal. It is the world record, you know, and it, sometimes we just have to remind ourselves of that when we're going through these epic disappointments, when we want to be at our best, the most. I mean, that was the one day of my life I was like, I want to be on this day, and yet it was one of my worst athletic days ever. But I felt like God was telling me in that moment, like, it's better to lose without me or with me than to win without me. And I felt like that was really just a great reminder for me that, you know, I've already won. I already have everything that I could want. I just need to realize that.
Yeah. And I know you outline in the book kind of, and you just alluded to that about you being very hardcore, and you were like, you would stick to the plan, and you were kind of like, you know, this is what it looks like and stuff, but also recognizing God's voice in the midst of it, which really culminated in a true plan for success and realizing what that looked like. How could that plan, like folks who aren't ever going to be competitive runners at that level, but maybe who have other things in life that God's calling them to, how could they apply your strategies to what God may be calling them to?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, I think about my career, and one thing that I did do well that I'm very proud of is I put myself in a place where I was desperate to hear God, and I included God in my day-to-day, what I was doing. Like, I feel like God wants to be a part of what we're doing, and so there was a time period where I left my professional team, I left my coach, even though I was at the very top of my game at the time, and went out on quote-unquote faith-based coaching, where I was basically coaching myself, but really like just asking God in prayer every single day, like, what do you want me to do today? And that was such a powerful time in my life, because I felt like what he told me first and foremost was, it's not necessarily about what you're doing, it's about how you're doing what you're doing. And so what's your heart condition like when you're out there running is more important than the nuts and the bolts of your workout. So I think that's what I would tell people, like, involve God in your journey and what you're doing. Like, don't just go to work and do work. Like, go to work and, like, be having a conversation with God while you're at work. Like, he wants to give you wisdom in your profession, you know, or in whatever your hobby is, or with your kids, or whatever it might be. Like, God wants to be a part of that. So I just encourage people, like, start a conversation with God when you're going throughout your day.
Yeah. Well, in addition to all the running, you actually have a, you know, not that running's not normal, but you actually have a normal life too. You mentioned your wife, Sarah, and you have four girls now, but that's a little bit of an unusual story. Tell us how your family came to be and how really God convicted you of stepping into being a dad to girls who didn't have one.
Yeah, this is, I mean, I could talk a long time about this, so I'm going to try and do it quickly. But in short, we were training over in Ethiopia. My wife, Sarah, and I didn't have any kids. This was 4 years ago. And I just fell in love with the people and the culture and the country, just everything about it, just something uniquely grabbed us about Ethiopia. But one of the things that really broke our heart was being on the streets in Addis and seeing all these kids on the street that are shining shoes, don't have parents, wearing tattered clothes. And yet they're super joyful and, like, amazing kids. You know, I'd hang out with them sometimes and just love these kids. So, you know, we knew that in order to make an impact in the world, it requires a lot of people to take one small step. So we thought, you know, our small step can be through adoption. So we started the process of adopting. During that time, we became aware of our girls, who are four biological sisters. They're looking for a home for them for about 3 years and couldn't find a home. So they were thinking about splitting them up and sending two to one couple in one country, two to another couple in another country. And I come from middle of five kids and just value my siblings so much. I'm like, I can't imagine being split from them, you know? So it was one of those things where, you know, God just kind of, like, gave us love in our heart for our girls, and we went out, we met them, we hung out with them, and then we ended up inviting them into our family, and they said yes to that, and they've been in the U.S. with us now for the last a little over 3.5 years now and are thriving. They're ages 18, 15, 11, and 8, so we got the whole spectrum. But, yeah, talk about instant family. We went from 0 to 4 real quick, but we've just loved it, and they've added so much joy and energy and excitement to our household.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. And like you said, the whole spectrum of ages and everything else you have going on there, that's pretty amazing. So tell us a little bit about what your day-to-day looks like now, because clearly, I mean, it's not like you stop professional running and you just stop, you know, any kind of running or working out or whatever, but what, you know, the ministry you're in, kind of what life looks like, and then really how would you encourage our audience in that, in serving God in what many would consider to be the ordinary day-to-day?
Yeah, you know, my day does have a lot of ordinary elements to it, you know, doing dishes, taking out the trash, driving my kids all over the place. I tell people that my office is my car because I'm in my car. It feels like more than any other place. But, you know, I do, like, I learned that from my last season of life, the things I learned were meant to be taken into this season of life, which is about encouraging and helping and, being a part of other people's journey. And so that's been a really fun season of life for me to get into. So now I'm coaching. I coach a few professional athletes. I coach some athletes online. And, just loving taking all these lessons I've learned throughout my career and passing it on to others. So, you know, I think that's what I would encourage your listeners to do, is I feel like we all need a father over us that's sowing into us, that's teaching us, that's giving wisdom to us, that's looking over us. But I think we also need to be encouraging other people on their journey. And I've just found that to just be a super, super rewarding thing for me to get to do, whether it's coaching high school cross country or coaching people online or, all the different things that we're involved in. But, yeah, our life is very full. A lot of dad stuff going on, a lot of stuff with my book, and then, like I said, a lot of coaching. And then I kind of picked up a personal hobby of weightlifting, so that's kind of my new thing. I don't run too much anymore, but I'm in the weight room every day. I give myself 1 hour a day to be selfish, and then that way I'm a decent human being to be around the rest of the day.
All right. Well, that's pretty cool. Well, folks, he is an Olympian, the American record holder in the half marathon. He is a husband. He's a dad. He's a ministry leader and in many ways an ordinary guy just like us, following Jesus and listening to his voice in everyday situations and the way that he's calling us to things that might be bigger than we can handle, but certainly through him we can handle them. So the book is Run the Mile You're In, Finding God in Every Step, which is a great, great, great reminder and lesson to all of us. So Ryan, thanks so much for being part of this.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You got the whole world in your hands, got the whole wide world in your hands, and every little thing is under your command, so I will trust your plans. You've got the whole world in your hands. It's the hardest thing, it's a constant fight in a world that moves at the speed of life, to slow the chaos down. But slowing on down is the only way I'll ever hear what you have to say. I need to hear you now, 'cause you've got this figured out. You've got the whole world in your hands, got the whole wide world in your hands, and every little thing is under your command, so I will trust your plans. You've got the whole world in your
Well, folks, as we finish out the show, we are opening up our inbox, as we always do. And this is where one of you asks a question, asking for some advice. And we bring in a fabulous expert who can give you some wisdom and hopefully some guidance on this topic. And today we're talking about finances, specifically giving. And we have Josh Zajcik here. Hey, Josh.
Hey, Lisa.
Great to have you. He works here at Focus on the Family with planned giving, and so certainly has to crunch numbers pretty often when it comes to this. And of course, he's always giving himself. So, yeah.
There's that.
Okay, there is that. So here's the question for you, Josh. Our listener says, something I've been struggling with recently is discerning what I should give my money to. Everyone needs donations and help. What criteria do you use to determine if you give or if you don't, and to whom? I don't have much left in my budget after bills and rent.
Yeah, so first let me just say, I think this is a really common question. I get this question a lot on our 800 number, and I'm glad it's being asked because I think a lot of folks are wrestling with the same question. But right out of the gate, a few scriptures come to mind, and the scriptures are God's thoughts on what he thinks of this issue. And you can do four things with money, right? You can earn it, save it, spend it, or give it away. Those are the things you can do with money. And so we need to basically take his thoughts and let those transform how we spend our money, give it away, and whatnot. So with that in mind, I think the first thing I would encourage this listener to remember is that scripture describes us as a steward. So that's a supervisor or a manager of the resources God's entrusted to us. And as a steward, you can really have three concepts that immediately come to mind. I need to steward my family and my resources to take care of my family. That would be a first thought. 1 Timothy 5:8 talking about someone who doesn't care for their family is actually worse than a non-believer. So I think immediately when we're helping people plan out what to give to or even in their estates on what to leave their resources to, you need to make sure you're taking care of your family. Secondly, scripture talks about stewarding your resources to care for the local church. In Galatians 6, Paul's telling the churches in Galatia, let us not grow weary of doing good. And he says, especially to the household of faith. So we need to prioritize first our families, then the local church. And that's really clear in scripture. But then I think the third point I'd encourage our listener to think about is that we need to understand stewardship is more than our finances. So we can care for the city that we're in or the people around us or these parachurch ministries and with our time and our talents and even our testimony of proclaiming what God's done. So there's other things there. And Jeremiah 29 talks about when you care for the welfare of the city, you're actually caring for your own welfare, right? So I think regardless of an individual's financial situation, their starting point should be, how am I caring for my family? How am I making sure that I'm stewarding, managing my resources to best care for them and then the local church? And that's where I would start and encourage this listener to give to. And then if you want to give beyond that to the parachurch, to the even something in your city you're just excited and passionate about, you don't have to just give finances. You can give your time. There's volunteer cleanup days, even here in Colorado Springs. I think churches and individuals should jump in and care for their city in those ways. So that's where I would encourage that listener to go.
Yeah, that's good. I do think it's, you know, there's an element of the whole faith issue in this too, of like, because I remember when I was young and just starting out and I didn't have money either. You know, I saw his last sentence here, I don't have much left in my budget after bills and rent. And I think, you know, also you have to just be prayerful before the Lord about what's he calling you to do. Because really there is an element of all this money is God's anyway.
That's right.
And so what are we, you know, we're called to give of the first fruits of our labor. And so I don't think that means like, let me pull out my rent and my bills and my food and my Netflix subscription and everything and then see if God can get a little left over.
That's exactly how my wife and I prepare our budget, is we start with giving first. So the income side versus the expense side, we start with the giving first and then we think about the house, the food, additional things. But for us, that is the first check written or direct deposit or whatever.
So. Yeah, super cool. Well, great guidelines. And I like the whole idea of like the four things that you can do with your money. That's a good place to start in thinking about that and prioritizing. So, well, folks, that is it for this week's show. As always, we love it when we hear from you. If you write to us at editor@boundless.org, we can answer a question of yours in the future. But also, you know, we have like 11 years of questions in the vault as well. So you can go onto our site and search them and see if there's maybe something that we've answered that might be exactly what you need for something that you're going through. And don't forget to share the show with your friends as well. You can do that especially by hopping over to Apple Podcast and or leaving a review, posting the show on your social media. Anything to get the word out is always super. So Josh, thank you so much. Great to have you. And folks, that is it for this week's show. I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.